This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 87. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional portfolio, website, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, you visit squarespace.com and use offer code IMPROVE at checkout. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast, your weekly dose of photography knowledge. Thank you for the download and for your support of Improved Photography. I am joined in this episode, as always, by my friend Darren Meller.
Hey Jim, how are you, my friend?
I am doing great. I am just fresh off a shoot in Oregon where I shot some fall color, and now I'm going to shoot an Olympian this weekend and then headed off to West Virginia. And then preparing still for Iceland in a couple weeks. I'm so excited about.
I'm excited for you. I thought I had a busy week. I've been traveling around getting a lot of the fall colors and even went over to Winterset, Iowa to photograph the bridges of Madison County with the beautiful fall colors and the composition of having water in the bridges. It just turned out magnificently. And gosh, I thought I was busy, but you have a lot on your plate, sir.
Yeah, I think just about everybody does, but it's been fun. I love doing it. Well, we got a ton of questions from our listeners, and also there's one that a student sent in that I thought we'd talk about because it's something that a lot of photographers have been interested in lately. So one of the students in our online classes asked how to get sponsored by Canon, Nikon, Sony, and other manufacturers that may want to sponsor a photographer. I think this is an interesting question. I think to answer it, we have to make a clear distinction between taking ads and taking sponsorships. Advertising is what we do here on the podcast. A company may, you know, purchase a spot. They may purchase a 60-second spot, and we read that. We read, you know, whatever they ask us to read to make them aware. Much like when you're watching The Office, which is one of my favorite shows to watch, and, you know, they have a Coke commercial in the middle. It doesn't mean you think that Jim Halpert only drinks Coke. It means there was an ad. Even if Jim Halpert was the one in the ad, you realize what that is. He's just reading the ad. Now, a sponsorship is different. A sponsorship is where you're expected to be the brand's ambassador everywhere you go. So if you're sponsored by camera bag company X, that means everywhere you post on social media, everywhere you go, you only use their brand of bag, and you talk about it everywhere you go. That's a sponsorship. They don't buy the spots. They buy your recommendation of that piece of gear. And so the first thing that I want to say to this student is really think this through about what this means for your brand. You know, if you're a portrait photographer, you're amazing. And you could spread the word about, you know, this company's camera bag or whatever, then maybe this is a good thing for your business. You can advertise for them, and it won't hurt your portrait photography one bit. If you're doing what we're doing, you're a blogger, you're a podcaster, and people are relying on your recommendations, well, then you have to be really careful about accepting a sponsorship, because then you may trick people into thinking, oh, Jim only likes Canon cameras, he doesn't like this. But actually, I'm sponsored by Canon, which I'm not. It was just an example. And it's something that I see a lot of bloggers and podcasters doing that I'm not real excited about, because it does make you biased in everything you do. Scott Kelby and their group got accepted money from Canon, and now they only use Canon since this year. Everybody in the office switched. And, you know, it's a personal choice what you think for the brand. I do think everybody should get paid for the work that they do, but just consider what it's going to mean to your brand. It may be a great choice for you. It may not be a great choice for you, depending on what you're trying to accomplish.
I would agree wholeheartedly, and it's just something you're going to have to consider. And if you do want to go down that road, the best way to do it is just networking and just trying to find a way to do it. But I would think long and hard before taking that big step.
Yeah, when I work with brands, usually the way that I work with them and with Improved Photography is I just talk to the guys at the factory, and I want to know what stuff they have so that I can tell you about cool products. We don't currently accept any sponsorships at all. We do have ad spots, but we don't accept any sponsorships from companies. And so I go and I talk to all the guys. I try to network with them. And when we do contests and stuff, I want to tell you about the different brands, because they'll often, you know, give us a tripod to give away to the winner of a contest or something like that. And it helps us to be aware. So that's how we work with them. I can tell you the best way to get sponsorships is networking, networking, networking. If you're going out, you know, into the middle of nowhere and you're at a beautiful landscape location, take a little selfie of you with that company's tripod or that company's camera bag and stuff, and send it to their social media manager. And that's the guy in marketing who then sees you using their product and kind of being an ambassador. That's the way to get sponsorships. And I've been offered them before, but it's not something that I'm accepting right now. All right, let's go to the next question about buying a Micro Four Thirds camera.
Hi, Jim. This is Tom from Portland, Oregon, and I need your help with something. I'm thinking about moving over to the dark side, I guess. I currently have a Canon 7D with, I guess, about four different lenses, and I love the camera. It does exactly what I need. I'm kind of a casual enthusiast type person. I'm not a professional, but I enjoy taking good pictures. But what I don't like about the 7D is that it's big and bulky. Recently, I was in a camera store and picked up a Micro Four Thirds camera, specifically the Panasonic GH4, and boy, I really liked the way it felt. I liked the size. It seems like it'd be much more convenient to carry that around with a couple of lenses than my Canon 7D. So I'm very tempted to convert to Micro Four Thirds. So I'd like your comments on that. You'll comment just APS-C sensor size versus Micro Four Thirds, or you can comment specifically Canon 7D versus Panasonic GH4 or both. As I mentioned, I've got a few Canon lenses, but I've checked on eBay, and boy, those things hold their value really well. So I'm not too concerned about selling my lenses, and I've gotten a number of good years out of the 7D, so I could let that go as well. So what are your thoughts? Thanks much. Bye.
All right, good question. Now, I wanted to include this question not because we haven't been talking enough about mirrorless on the show, but because it has become quite the subject of controversy on the website. After we released our podcast, 2 weeks ago was it, Aaron? 3 weeks ago, about mirrorless cameras, some people definitely misunderstood what we were saying and wrote pretty angry comments on the website. I was really surprised. In fact, I thought it was funny. I was reading through our iTunes reviews, which I go through every once in a while. We don't get a whole lot anymore, but we have like 1,000 in there. And someone said, "I've listened to your show for over a year, love the show, but you made this comment about mirrorless and I hated it," and gave us 1 star. And I thought, okay, think about how crazy that is. We gave you a year's worth of free photography, entertainment, and instruction, and because of one comment, you gave us a 1 star. It's kind of unfair, right? But oh well, we have like 900 positive ones, so it really doesn't make a difference. But I think sometimes when you talk about mirrorless, you're like offending some. It's like you're offending their daughter, you know? People are so particular. I think we were pretty clear on the episode. I don't have an axe to grind against mirrorless. It's really neat, and there's some cool things to do about it. This listener called in and said, you know, he saw a Micro Four Thirds camera, really liked the form factor and the lightweight, and that's why he wants to switch over. Absolutely go for it. That was our whole point in that episode, is there are benefits and drawbacks to mirrorless cameras. So analyze it, write your pro and con list, and if there are more pros on the Micro Four Thirds side and you can deal with the cons, then absolutely you should switch over. That's the camera for you. All we were saying in that episode is that for us right now, for both me and Darren, the cons outweigh the pros. You know, the disadvantages outweigh the advantages. And so that's not why I'm not switching over yet. I fully believe that I will over time. But right now, the advantages are outweighed by the disadvantages.
That's for sure. And it's definitely not a question of if I'm going to switch, it's just when. And right now, it just continues to be that line drawn down the paper of pros and cons. And right now, they're just not quite there for me yet. But one cool tip before we move on to the next question is we did have a student that gave us a positive feedback on that. We found out that the YN560 and the RF trigger that is used with YN560 flash system does work on the Sony A7. So we do appreciate that positive feedback in that respect too. So like Jim was saying, we may get some negative feedback now and then, but we sincerely appreciate the positive ones.
Yes, very good. All right, let's go to the next question about capturing the light.
Hello, Jim. My name is Katya. I'm a beginner photographer from South Africa, and my question is about capturing the lightning strike. I've been trying to capture it with my Canon 5D Mark III camera, and I found it very difficult to catch it in time. So I started researching about the lightning triggers. Here is my question. Is it easier and better to use the lightning trigger? If yes, which affordable brand or model you'd suggest for Canon 5D Mark III? If not, then which settings should I use to get the best results while shooting the lightning? Thank you so much for your podcast. I find it very helpful and fun. And please say hello to Dustin. I miss him on your show. Bye.
All right, great question. And I will tell Dustin hi for you. I just talked to him a couple weeks ago when it was the iPhone announcement. We geeked out a little bit about it. Well, have you done a lot of shooting lightning, Darren?
I've done a fair amount, and what I actually do is I don't rely on the system. I know there's some great systems out there that I've researched as far as the star ratings and the reviews on them, but I will actually just use a Canon intervalometer, which is a shutter release, and I'll put it in bulb mode, and as soon as I hear a distant lightning strike, I'll just hold down the shutter and make sure it's open, and then once it flashes, I'll just let go, and it's kind of like whack-a-mole with sports, but I think that works for me.
Yeah, very cool. I do the same. I don't rely on any kind of tool to trigger the shutter when I'm shooting lightning. There are a couple ways to do this. You can either have it trigger on the sound or on the increase in light. Now, if you have it trigger on the sound, you're going to have to be where the lightning is right close to you, because the problem is that the sound is going to come obviously after the lightning. But if you were like in a lightning storm, that can work. But I really think that the very best way to do this is just to use a long exposure. In fact, I think just about everybody who's shooting lightning is doing it that way. And I've done that too, Darren, with the intervalometer. And sometimes I'll kind of combine the two, that I'm using a, you know, 5-10 second shutter speed with an intervalometer on. So it'll take a 5 second exposure and then it'll turn off and start another one right away because of that intervalometer is going. And it works out great because anything that happens, you just are taking a lot of photos to get there. But with that long exposure, you can get multiple strikes of lightning, and with the intervalometer, you're going to keep getting it over time. And if you keep your camera steady, what you can do is, you know, keep taking the exact same picture, same camera settings, don't move your ball head or anything, so you're taking the same picture. Then when you have those multiple pictures of lightning strikes, just take one frame, put it on top of the other picture, on top of the other picture in Photoshop, and then set the blending mode. And by changing that blending mode to, you know, overlay a hard light, something that's just going to grab the lighter areas to lighten, and then when you set the blending mode to lighten, then you're only adding the lightning strike to the picture. So you can have multiple lightning strikes, but it won't change the overall exposure because it's only adding the pixels that are brighter than the underlying layer.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And you can actually possibly even composite more lightning bolts from one shot into the same scene if you want to make it more of an artistic thing and just have, you know, scads of lightning bolts throughout the sky. So that's a really good tip.
Yeah, and but I am, if you are just really want a device for this, then I'm really liking Trigger Trap. They're constantly adding stuff to it, and they do have a lightning mode on the Trigger Trap. It's just a little dongle that connects from your camera to your phone, and it just does an incredible amount of stuff, and it's very, very inexpensive too. So definitely check out Trigger Trap. It's pretty neat what they're doing.
Yeah, it sounds very neat. And then our next question that we have is explaining the difference in flash mounts. So let's hear what this question is all about.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm from Sutton Coldfield, Birmingham, England. In my bag, I carry a Nikon D300, which I support with a Sigma 17-70 and a 70-300. Also a SB600 flash gun. I'm very happy with the images as I keep shooting on a trial and error basis, trying, testing, modifying until I get the shot or the style I want. I do this due to my lack of technical knowledge about photography, so I will be taking some of your classes later in the year to learn about this. I recently joined the gym, so big thanks for the podcast as this gets me through the ordeal of the treadmill and the cross trainer. So again, thank you for that. My question is about flash modes. Can you explain the difference between front curtain, rear curtain, and slow sync, and some practical examples, please? P.S. Love the podcast. Look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
All right. This is a very good question. All right. Now, the quick answer is this. If I only could set it on one, I would probably choose rear curtain. But all this is deciding when you want the flash to fire during the exposure. So let's just use an example of a very long exposure just to make this a little bit easier to imagine. So the shutter opens, and do you want the, as soon as the shutter is fully open and the imaging sensor is fully exposed, do you want the flash to fire then, front curtain, or do you want that flash to fire at the very end of the exposure, which is rear curtain sync? Now, the reason that we'll usually choose rear curtain sync is that if there is any movement, it will be natural. So let's say we have somebody running across the scene, and we want to get a blur of them running behind and then them be frozen in front of the blur. Now, if I choose front curtain sync, it'll show a frozen them and then a ghost of them running in front of themselves, and it looks really, really weird. But if I choose rear curtain, we get the blur of them because the shutter is open, but there's not a whole lot of light coming in. And then the pop of the flash happens, and it freezes them at the end of the motion, so it looks much, much more natural.
Yes, and I've seen people use this a lot with the rear curtain as well, and it's my understanding of it, doing some research, is that you're actually taking almost two exposures when you're shooting it. You're using the ambient light for one exposure, and then you're using the flash that pops, and then that's when it freezes the action. I mean, yes, it's one file at the end of the shot, but it's actually taking two different exposures, and depending on whether you're using rear or front curtain, it's going to give you a different effect. So yeah, I think that's great advice in that respect as well.
All right, let's go to the next question about the publication process.
Hey, Jim, this is David Johnston with DavidJohnstonArt.com in Nashville, Tennessee. I was wondering if you could explain the photo publication process. You know, I've heard a lot of photographers talk about selling their work to magazines and other publications, and I was wondering how you make that jump and dive into the competitive world of photo publication. Thanks.
The best way to get into getting your photos published in publications, magazines, newspapers, that kind of thing, is to first pick a little bit of a niche and shoot a series on that niche so that you have a body of work. The problem that I often see when I talk to students who are trying to get their work out there is they'll say, you know, I'm interested in you know, nature photography. And they have pictures of moose, they have pictures of deer, they have pictures of landscapes, they have pictures of tornadoes, you know, all kinds of nature stuff, underwater photography in the tropic islands. And then when they submit their work to a publication, you know, they say, well, let's see what you got. and they, you know, they see a beach and they say, oh, I'm not interested in that. This is an outdoor climbing magazine. I only want to see your landscape. Oh, and I only have a couple of those. And so you're kind of cutting yourself off right away. What I would do is I would definitely pick an area to start. So, you know, I'm getting into boating a lot lately. I've been doing a lot of water sports with my kids and my wife. And so if I really wanted to get published in a magazine right now, I would stick with that. I would go shoot a body of, you know, 15, 20 awesome, fantastic photos just on water sports. And then I'm going to look for what magazines are out there. You know, there's pontoon and deck boat magazine. There's boating magazine, whatever I want to get published in. And you can look for a contact page, and it's very normal. This happens all the time. You won't be weird at all if you just send them an email and say, could you get me in touch with your photos editor? And any bigger magazine is going to have a photos editor, and you just send them a few of your photos. It happens all the time with editors of magazines. If your work's up to snuff and it's in their niche of something they're very interested in, then yeah, that's how you get your foot in the door. You just got to have a good body of work for their specific niche and then get it out there. But if you're just a general sports photographer, general landscape photographer, general portrait photographer, this is going to be very, 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 very tough because they have a lot of photos to choose from. I think you're most likely to succeed when you go to a specific niche.
Yes, I would agree as well. And shoot a series. Like, I just found out that my niche is kind of leaning towards street photography and whatnot. And if there's any magazines or publications out there that focus on that, I'm going to send them that. But I also dabble in other types of photography, and I think it would be a mistake to include anything else that steers away from that niche. So that's great advice, to stick with one thing that you want to have published and send them something that's going to be, you know, relative and actually usable for him. So
yeah, especially because some niche publications have a very difficult time finding those photos. Let's say there's a yacht magazine. There are actually quite a few of them, but let's say, you know, you have a yacht or you have a friend with a yacht. Go take a series of 15 pictures, because how many people have a yacht? And so how in the world are they going to get photos for every single issue of their magazine? They're going to have to hire a photographer to go out because it's so niche. I was looking on Shutterstock and Fotolia and iStock the other day for pictures of pontoon boats, because I was saying, hey, you know, is this a good area? Should I take some pictures of this to submit to the stock photography websites? I only found one picture of a pontoon boat. Inflatable pontoons, yeah, but of an actual pontoon boat, I found one picture on all of the stock photography websites. So is your photo going to sell? Heck yeah, because there's no competition out there for it. So think about what niche areas you have access to. I'll bet you if you really put your mind to it, either you or friends around you have access to quite a few little small niches that you could shoot a body of work in and then submit that. That's a great way to get started.
For sure. And before we move on, I would like to thank two sponsors that have made today's podcast possible. The first one is Swirl. Swirl is a photo framing app available first on iPhone. The free Swirl app allows you to print, frame, and deliver beautifully wrapped photos quickly and easily, all from your iPhone in less than 3 minutes. You get high quality frames that come in 4 colors, and they both work with desk and wall frames. Swirl allows you to print from 4x6s all the way up to 16x20-inch prints, and that is awesome because they come at affordable prices starting as low as $19.99. And with this 20% discount code, which is IMPROVE, you can get printed, framed, and delivered photos wrapped with special gift wrapping and a customized message, all for $16.99. Swirl is awesome. Try Swirl, the Swirl framing app, now and get 20% off your first order with a promo code IMPROVE at getswirl.com. That is www.getswirl.com. Our second sponsor we'd like to thank today is Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy for you to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial, get 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code IMPROVE at checkout. A better web starts with your website at Squarespace. Make sure to enter that offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% after you get your free trial. That's so awesome, and we want to thank both Squarespace and Swirl for sponsoring the IMPROVE Photography Podcast.
Let's go to the next question about sports photography basics.
Hi, Jim. This is Carrie Barth. I'm from Baldwin City, Kansas. And my question is how to take better action shots of my daughters who are on a third and fourth grade basketball team. They are playing, and I would love to be able to just shoot better shots in general. I know you had the Dave Black on there talking about sports photography. I'd like to get specifics on what the settings on my camera need to be. I have a Canon 7D. I have a 300 millimeter lens. I have a Canon Speedlight flash. I was using AI servo trying to get quick shots. However, it was kind of going slow. And the girl who was sitting next to me was click, click, clicking, and I cheated. I peeked at her camera and saw she was using the TV mode on her Canon, which was a lower-end camera, and I'm sitting here wondering, do I need to take my flash off? If you could give me some tips on the settings I should use to get, I'd love to get a series. Like, for example, when my daughter's going in for a layup, I'd like to get the photo of her leading into it to the shot of her, you know, going up for that basket. Things like that. So love your podcast. I've listened to all 50 and appreciate your feedback. Thanks.
All right, Darren, it sounds like she's having kind of a frame rate problem, that something's going on that's slowing her camera down. Can you think what that might be?
I think that it's definitely, she's limited if she's using her flash with the max sync speed, but also if she's not using her flash, it's dependent on the aperture. She didn't mention on that 300 millimeter lens what the max aperture is. So if she's not shooting wide open and she's shooting with a larger depth of field, it's going to cause her to have slower shutter speeds. And also, it just depends on the lighting in there. There's a multitude of factors. And if she has her ISO set at 100 for a noise-free photo, it's also going to limit her ability to have faster shutter speeds too. So I hate to say it because I'm not a fan of cranking my ISO, but that might be an option for her beyond having to see if she can talk to the school administrators to place speed lights around the floor, kind of like Dave Black does.
Yeah, that's right. I had kind of the same thought is, you know, she said she wants to be able to click, click, click like the girl next to her. And there could be two things. This could be a shutter speed problem. You aren't having a whole lot of light, so it's going click, click, and everything's blurry because of that. Or you know, even if it's, you know, not blurry, but still just a slow shutter speed, you know, 1/100th of a second, you're going to feel that, you know, it's not going to be the brrr. Another option, though, is if it is the frame rate that's the problem and not the shutter speed, then one is I would check your memory card and make sure your memory card isn't slowing you down. That very well could be. If you're using an old, slow memory card, the camera may be ready to process a photo a lot quicker than the memory card can have it written to it. So that's one thing to check. And then the other is the flash. If you're using that flash, maybe we're waiting for the recycle time on that flash, and so it won't take the picture. So those are a few things to check. If I were there sitting next to you, I could just listen to it and listen if we're talking about a 1/15th of a second slit shutter speed, that's the problem, but it is still frozen by flash, or if it's the actual frame rate that's sounding slow.
Yes, I agree in that respect. And when it comes down to it, take a look and make sure you're using a class 10 card, because if it's not a class 10 card and it's a class 8, 7, 6, or whatever number, it could be slowing down the ability for the shutter speed. But like Jim said, unless we're sitting right next to you, it's kind of hard just to diagnose what's going on in that situation.
All right, let's go to our last question about photographing youth sports.
Hi, my name is Angela. I'm from Sturbridge, Massachusetts. My question is about photographing a youth basketball team. I am not in business, and I'm a hobbyist. My niece's basketball team has asked me to take a group picture of them as a gift for their coach, and I had a couple questions about it. The first one being, since they are youth, they're underage, do I need to have the parents sign a release since they're minors? The second is, what's the best lens to use for this? I'm thinking about renting a lens. I'm not sure which one would be the best for capturing pictures in a gymnasium. And the third is about charging for taking the photos. They've asked me what I would charge, and since I'm a hobbyist, it's nothing I've asked before. So I'm on the fence as to whether or not just to do it for free for a portfolio building. Should I start a business? But otherwise, I'm not sure if I should even charge at all. Thank you. Take care.
I think she's asking the right question here. She's saying, should I charge for this? And then the next question, do I want to charge for this? Whenever you start charging for your photography, photography is going to change. For some people, it won't be a good change. If you feel pressured, you're not a very confident person, this could really make photography stop being fun very quick. Because if you're not very confident, then when you take the pictures, you'll feel really pressured to do a good job. And then, you know, when you give the photos to people, you'll be paranoid if they didn't turn out how you want, that they aren't going to like them. And suddenly photography can be not very fun at all. To some people, like myself, business is kind of a hobby in and of itself. Like whatever hobby I get into, it's kind of fun if I can make some money from it too. And so as I have made photography my business, my livelihood, it's been even more fun than it was when it was just a hobby. It has not ceased to be fun at all. So for me, it's a great fit. So really think about yourself and your personality. It's cool to be able to make some extra money, but keep in mind that it's going to dramatically change how you view your hobby from here on out if you're that kind of personality. So really think about what it's going to do. Now, if you are going to charge, I am a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer, and you need to seek legal advice from somebody licensed in your jurisdiction. What I would do in this situation is I would not worry about getting a release. You're just taking a picture of somebody, and so you don't need a release for that. Now, there's a very technical problem here. I have never, ever, ever heard of this being challenged in court or where anybody has ever made an issue of this. But let's say I'm taking a picture of a basketball team, and I take the picture of the team. There are 20 people in the picture. And then I take that picture, I put it on my website, and I advertise it as being for sale. Well, that's pretty normal, right? That's how group pictures work. But also in a way, you're using everybody's likeness in that picture to advertise that service, the fact that you're selling those pictures. And so in a very technical way, that could cause an issue. But I have never, ever heard of a photographer having an issue with this. I think everybody understands that when you stand in for a group photo, it's going to be sold for sale. So I think you're just fine there. I wouldn't worry about it one bit. The real question is, do you want to do it?
Yeah, that's a big question of whether or not you want to do it and then whether or not you want to charge, because it is going to change the dynamic behind the shoot. And like Jim said, if you're not as confident as you think you'd like to be in shooting it, it just could be a dreadful process from the time you shoot to the time you deliver. So maybe it'd be good to get some tread on your worn off on your tires and get some experience of shooting for free, and then get the confidence to charge. And then just you might lose some of the people who are accepting the shots for free. But once they start to realize the value that are coming out of your photos, then I think they'll happily pay for them, because your work's going to speak for itself.
That's right. If you have that luxury where you don't need to make photography a business, but you do want to do stuff like that, it really takes a lot of pressure off, because, you know, you shoot it and you give it to people, and hey, if they don't like it, then the price is right. It was free, you know? And then once you're very confident with your abilities and you know you can deliver good quality every time, then maybe then it would be really fun for you to start charging, because then you know people are going to like it because you can do a really nice job with each shoot you do.
And if you do charge, always, this is something that both Jim and I do, offer a 100% money back guarantee. It just gives yourself confidence, and it gives your clients confidence that, hey, even if something goes wrong, they get their money back, and it's a learning lesson for you.
Yeah, I really believe in that. It's not right for everybody, but for me, it's just made everything a lot easier. You know how many people have asked for their money back from a shoot with me? Zero. Yeah, I'm a good photographer. I'm not a fantastic photographer. I don't pretend that I'm like God's gift to photography, and that's why. It's that most people are going to be happy with the job you do if you do a professional job and try to do your best. And so I don't really think you're going to have the issue of half the shoots you do are going to ask for their money back. That's never happened to me. But it really takes the pressure off you, and it lets people trust you more when you're booking a shoot. So I really do believe that it's a good policy. Not right for everybody, but I think it's a good policy.
For sure. And I haven't had anyone come back on it either, but it's almost always a selling point for some people to say, hey, you know, Darren takes pride in what he does, and if something does go wrong, he's going to stand behind his work.
Very cool. Well, In every episode, we want to share a doodad, a resource, a product, a something that we want to share with you. And mine, I mentioned in the last episode, but only briefly, but I wanted to I don't want to short at all. It is the Trigger Trap. It is awesome, and it is not expensive at all. Check out Trigger Trap. It works. What it is it just plugs into your camera with just a normal, like a cable release connection, and then it goes on a wire to a headphone jack, and you plug in that headphone 3.5 millimeter connection into your cell phone. And then suddenly your camera got a huge upgrade with all kinds of stuff that the camera manufacturers really should be putting in these for the amount of money they're charging. Side note. But it just does awesome stuff. Let me give you an example. So I'm looking at the Trigger Trap app, which is free after you make the purchase. And it just does a ton of stuff. So you can do just a normal cable release, like if you just don't want to bump the camera. You can press on your phone and hold it just like in bulb mode. You can press and lock so it does for a long time. You can set the exposure for a long time. You can do a time lapse so it's an intervalometer. And then you can do what they call a time warp. That is a time lapse, but it accelerates the photos as it goes on. So it kind of distorts time in kind of a cool way. You can do a distance lapse, so it's using the GPS in your phone that as you're traveling, you're taking pictures as you move, that it can take a picture every certain distance that you travel. You can use it for star trails. You can do bulb ramping, which is super cool. So let's say I want to shoot a time lapse of a sunrise. Well, it starts out very dark, and then it's going to get brighter. So you can set the exposure to change as it's getting brighter without the flicker of auto exposure, like if you were shooting an aperture priority. So bulb ramping is pretty neat. It's an advanced feature for sure, but it's neat. It has a sound sensor, so when it hears a sound like a clap or a balloon popping or, whatever it is, if you want to do something high speed, it will trigger it right when there's a sound. It has a vibration sensor, so when there's vibration, it can take a picture. A motion sensor, which would actually be a cool way to do. You could mount your camera, behind a basketball standard pointing down, and it'll only start taking pictures when it sees the players come to that side of the court. That's pretty neat. Facial recognition, so when it sees somebody smile, it can take a picture. And I could go on and on and on. I mean, this thing is packed with features, and it's so inexpensive. Like, seriously, pick one up, people.
That sounds awesome. And my doodad of the week, we actually touched upon a while back ago, and it was the Sony QX1 and the Sony QX30. They're actually these camera mounts. They look like you're carrying around a lens, and you don't need to attach it to your phone. It only uses your phone as the user interface, like the back of the LCD of your camera. And when I was first looking at it, I suspected it was only for Sony, but you can, as long as you can run the app on there that's called Media Remote, and I just looked it up and it does work for iPhone, you can actually be sitting on one side of a restaurant and have your friend carry around the QX1 or the QX30 and shoot photos. I think that it's just a really unique way to start taking different photos. It shoots a high megapixel. It looks like the QX1 shoots about 20.1 megapixels and the QX30 shoots at 20.4. The QX30 has a little bit faster frame rate. It has a pop-up flash and it shoots in RAW, which is amazing, and it's using their new Bions X processor. So I think it's a great little doodad to have out there, and the QX1's going for $400 and the QX30 is going for about $350, and they should be available here in November. So I think that would be a nice doodad because they're not just being partial to only using a Sony or Android or Apple device. As long as you have a smartphone that can run the app, I think you're good to go. And that's my dude out of the week, because it just seems really neat to grab those new perspectives.
Very awesome. Well, some cool stuff in this episode. I hope you all learned a lot. We really appreciate your support of Improved Photography. Be sure you're not just hanging around the podcast, because we have a ton going on the website and on social media. Just lots of things we're doing. We're doing some contests and a lot of articles. We are adding several editors and writers, so we're going to have fresh content going up on the website all the time, starting now and in the near future as we're ramping that up. I hope in the next short while we'll be having multiple articles going out every single day. So if you you know, have the habit of waking up. I wake up and read blogs on my feed reader. I use Feedly on my phone. You just download the Feedly app and then you can add a bunch of blogs that you want to follow on it. Cause I'm, you know, I never take the time to go to websites when I'm at a computer, but that's what I do in the mornings. So be sure to add Improved Photography to your RSS reader or come by the website periodically and, check out all the stuff we're doing there. Thanks for joining us in this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye-bye.